And today I'd like to talk about, the development of wisdom inside. The practice we do here is called Vipassana, as many of you know. Vipassana can be translated by seeing deeply or deep understanding. And it's translated in English with the word insight. So as we practice, we have insight, there's understanding about reality. Maybe I could put it in two kind of categories: reality, the nature of reality, and how to hold it. So all the practices we do here, the format of the retreat, the silence, the sitting, the walking, the instructions, everything is kind of trying to facilitate coming closer to that, to, you know, creating the right conditions for insight, understanding to arise, to happen. And so what we do, as I understand it, is that we give a fresh attention, fresh care to what is happening as it's happening. Extraordinary attention. It's almost like an ordinary attention, except that it has a little extra to it, a little more fullness to it. And in this way we get more, and you might recognize this as I describe it, we get to have a kind of a intimate experiences with different phenomena. And they become very specific. Right? It's not walking in general, it's this step. It's not sitting in general, it's in this moment here. It's not, the breath. You know, it's this in-breath, or this taste, this mouthful at the meal time, or this moment of the day, not just being here at the farm, but here now. So we kind of zoom in, and so we get to feel the specificity of the moment or of the experience. People describe this, often on retreat we describe this, we're like, oh, suddenly, like I was really tasting, you know, this particular taste of, I don't know what, cinnamon or licorice, or, you know, there was a présence accrue in French, so a crude presence. No. So like a, yeah, so some kind of zooming in, there really is this experience. And this in itself can, well, it can be many things, but there can arise out of that generous attention, kind of, contentment. I think I heard Anushka say contentedness. So there's a presence to this moment, the light in this moment, the warmth in this moment, the freshness of the air, and so a kind of insight that I have around this, for me that's, I find pretty kind of both simple, ordinary, but also powerful. So this kind of paradox here, where it's absolutely simple, not much to report, yet there's a deep meaning to it. It's so, I might be caught in some idea. I have a very, very recent example just here, walking here outside a few minutes ago. I could see this mind perception of reality was, you're about to give a talk, you have to give good stuff, you know, like, so my mind was kind of looking to produce ideas, like looking for kind of content stuff to say. And And at some point, there was the coldness of the stone on which I was. Maybe I moved from sun area to shade area, and so the coldness, and there was this experience of coldness and the intimacy, like it was suddenly became full. Just this experience of the coldness, and that kind of problematic disappeared for a moment, like another reality showed itself. There's this happening now. And it was liberating. I was liberated in some ways, you know, in some ordinary ways. And I was caught in a pattern. I have to produce something, I have to come up with something. And suddenly, oops, it vanished. There was just the coolness. And then there was other sensations, you know, maybe the slight wind on the skin. And whoop, the mind was liberated from being caught in some kind of belief system formation. It was very kind of local, I would say, ponctuel in French, like just in this moment. But to me, there's an insight in that. There was a construction and I was caught in this. And then being there, actually, in terms of preparing to share, seemed much more appropriate than the other idea I had about it, like, must produce really good something, you know, provide something. Suddenly there was being here. Oh, that's closer to it. You know. So it's very slight, but I see it often, where, you know, I might be, there might be some kind of construction of, you know, kind of speculations in the area, maybe arena of doubt. You know, like, what is my worth? You know, am I worth something? So something, I'm putting more words than, it's more vague than this, it's just a sense of, you know, who am I? Do I fit? There's more words in it than the actual kind of sense that I don't know what, you know. And suddenly, through a sense experience, this vanishes. And it reveals the ephemeral, mirage-like nature of that state, belief, attitude, construction of the mind. And so to me, I'm deeply grateful to be shown how something can seem so sticky, or, you know, grab me at the gut level, you know, sense that I, something, you know, and suddenly, whoops, it vanishes. And there's just a moment of hearing. And it shows me that what I thought was like so important and so solid and so serious was actually just, ephemeral in some ways. And so I'm extremely thankful to the practice of sensory awareness that we're doing here. It's not the only thing we're doing, but definitely one of them. When I was 25 years old, I learned that I was HIV positive at a time where there was no, there was just strong AZT. And there was a big big switch of identity, I would say. You know, like I thought I went from being eternally young, beautiful, healthy, you know, like something of that nature. Was like I'm not sure I would have explained it exactly like this, but there was a sense of I exist, will exist, you know. And health is me, and you know, youth also is forever. And suddenly in the doctor's office there was like, actually no, it's really took a wrong curve, you know, and you have to start right away very intense antibiotics and AZT. And suddenly there was what I thought was solid, permanent, you know, was shown to me in a kind of dramatic way that I was mistaken. And it was very, very distressing. And I remember having a teacher who told me, Pascal, it's really hard to be in your mind right now, you know, and you're not well accompanied in your mind when you're in there. So try to stay very much in the senses, you know, see, be aware of colors, be aware of movement, and maybe because I came from the world of theater and movement, this is something I could actually you know, recognize and use as a boy. Is that the word? I started to notice things like this, and maybe in the year following I found myself in a retreat where these were pretty much the instructions. And you know, where I would tend to go towards you know, all kinds of fear constructions, and my thoughts were produced a lot by panic and confusion and shame and worry and really big confusion about, you know, the world, you know, I don't know how to say how, you know, I had either failed it or that failed me or pushed me aside, you know, or confirmed that that was just my worth, you know, that I was worth just dying, getting rid of, or something like this. So there was all of these. And then there was these very, very regular instructions to hear the sounds of the night, you know, to feel the warmth of the day. And so these things really helped for me balance the way I was caught in the productions of my mind, you know, and come back to reality. And so in this way I was able to develop some qualities that are extremely helpful, and now they're my you know, my most precious friends, or my allies, or my I would like, maybe one day I don't know, let's try it. My powers, you know, I'm saying my, but yeah, let's drop the mind. Powers. I didn't know that there was this possible, and through this practice it's been developed, the capacity to actually feel and be curious about something that is happening, the capacity to allow something to happen, even something uncomfortable, and at different times something extremely uncomfortable. The capacity to have something happen that is hard, when I thought the only thing you do is you reject it, you push it aside. And as we know, some things actually won't be pushed aside, you know, they'll be there for a few moments or longer, you know. They can be emotional states, they can be situations, they can be experiences of the body. And so one kind of wisdom, intelligence, I'd like to name is in the teachings, it's this particular kind of intelligence. It's that we call vipassana. It's an intelligence that is felt. It's not an intelligence that is at the level of information. Oh, these qualities are good for you, you know. So that's kind of limited, because we know, like, oh, I shouldn't be like this, I shouldn't be like this. We know, but we don't have access to it in that other form of intelligence. And so when we practice here, we gain access to this particular kind of wisdom called, we could call discernment. And this particular aspect here in Pali is called kusala and akusala. What is helpful, onward leading, liberating, and what ways we hold things that are entangling, oppressive, stressful for us. And so, it's part of what's happening here during the week, all these hours of silence, of paying attention as we move about, eat, walk, sit, look at, I don't know, what remains of the sunset, or hear the sounds. We're not thinking about stuff, we're not receiving information, we're actually learning how to feel from inside. And we can be very deeply touched, even shaken, that's how I've experienced this, shaken in positive ways, and shaken, very positive ways, by the attitudes of the mind, the different ways to hold things. And so, the mind will be agitated, opinionated, doubtful, what am I doing? And suddenly there's a moment of quietness, of just hearing frogs, And this is impressive. Suddenly there was no positioning of I want to get, or I don't want this, or am I going to succeed? It just vanishes for a second. Just a second. And in this practice, what I found very, what is powerful is that just that second of not pushing away, not trying to get, being really present in that moment. We won't have words to describe it. It will be an impression. It's really at the level of a felt sense, impression. We're touched by this. Or an inner moment of an inner experience of, it can be acceptance for a moment, it can be kindness, and we'll be deeply touched by the rightness, the wiseness of that attitude. It'll be felt, it'll be recognized. Sometimes actually it happens also through transmission. So through the voice of the teacher, we'll feel, we'll gain access to a quality of mind, could be compassion, it could be equanimity, some steadiness of mind or something, and we'll recognize it in the voice of the other, or sometimes in the attitude of another retreatant, There will be a moment where we just see somebody, they do something, it can be something kind, or the way they do the walking, and there's something transmitted. We can do this, human beings, for one another. And in that we receive this, and we're touched, in a way almost shaken, like, wow. Because we are developing a sensitivity, we're developing that intelligence here, where we're not keep telling the world what it is and should be, and we're not kind of aggressing the world in this way. We're learning to receive it. And in these ways we'll be touched by the different ways to be. I was last year, a number of months ago, I was teaching a LGBTQ retreat in the Netherlands. It was the first over there too, and there was 11 of us. It was very, very sweet. And one evening I just thought, how many, gender queer or gender non-conforming, intersex, gay, lesbian, trans, teacher do I know that are alive now, teaching in this tradition? And I just thought I would probably come up with 5 or 6. You know, like that was my kind of initial. Then I wrote them down, and I came up to 42 teachers in this tradition who are doing. So there's a lot of us out there, you know. Trans men, women, and, the whole of us. And in terms of transmission, there's been a number of ways that some of these teachers have been, for me, have been very, very meaningful. I want to extend, I just said 42 teachers, but we're also very much teachers for each other. You know, in the way that we're practicing here, we can go from 42 to 84 or something. You know? 'Cause we are doing this for each other. Also, we are teaching each other. You know, I think in a way. I'm curious about queer dharma. Like, I'd like to see this. You know how Buddhism traveled from culture to culture, and it retained its very vibrant wisdom and essence, and it took, you know, the, I don't know if I can say, the colors of different cultures as it traveled, and I would like to think that there is a, you know, a queer dharma that can be very vibrant, and that maybe non-queer people one day would like to, you know, benefit from the insights and maybe even practices that would be born. I would like to, you know, in some way. I'd certainly like to see this, you know, witness this in some ways, and see this image. Kevin, can I name the? So there's a book that's going to come out, I think, in October. It's a series of essays from trans, genderqueer, and nonconforming folks writing about the Dharma. And Kevin, with who? Anyway, there's many of you, but with you helped create this, or you created this with many others. And actually, last November, you sent it to me, and I devoured it. And there was beautiful insights in this. So I'm looking forward to us reading it. And so, reading the book, I was receiving transmission. You know, I felt like I was, that the wisdom was being shared through the book, and it was helping me understand, you know, who I am and in which world I live, and how to hold it. And so this kusala, akusala, ways to hold things. And I'll just share a few moments of transmission that were meaningful to me, and then they might resonate with you. Maybe I'll start with something. I mean, many, many things I received from Anushka. And I think last year when we were teaching the LGBTQI retreat at IMS, you were talking about the Buddha, and I'll put it in my words. What I heard was you saying how the Buddha, you know, cut his hair and put on robes and, you know, changed his appearance to actually reflect his identity, you know, his true identity, and how he understood that, you know, there's a malleability in the world, in our perceptions, and a lot of possibilities, and that, and so to me, it kind of it gave a. There was something, you know, to the. Suddenly, it became a kind of a. Somewhat of a queer lineage. You know, there was something that happened, like a realigning of things, you know. Like a rereading, and that's important. I think that we do this, you know, that we read, you know, how we read novels and we read movies with our particular bent, you know, recognizing whose character is LGBTQI and is not named exactly, you know, but we know, reading Shakespeare, you know. And so, you know, since the beginning of me hearing stories of Buddhist stories, I always thought clearly, Ananda. You know, Ananda is the Buddha's cousin who lives with him for 25 years, attend to him. He goes teach to the women in the community. He's this really devoted. Anyway, every time I'm reading Ananda, I'm like, you know, he's definitely us, you know. And it's important that he is, you know, he truly is. I mean, perceptions have, you know, we make meanings with things. It seems important. So when you said this, Anushka, there's something that realigned, you know, like suddenly it was like, wow, I'm right in the path, you know. And I remember also hearing, so impressions like this, hearing Irina Wiseman, one teacher of this tradition. So one time I was co-teaching with her, and I was sitting there listening to her talk, and my eyes were closed, and, you know, it was a few days in, so there was this really sensitivity was heightened, you know, and so the sensitivity also means that we're going to be more touched, you know, like we're going to be, it's going to reverberate, and that's what we're doing here. We make ourselves sensitive so that things really vibrate, you know, they become really present. They have an impact. Yeah. And so I was sitting this, just attentive, and she slowed down somewhere in what she was teaching, and she just said, I am honored to be queer. And something again realigned in me, you know, where like I had never experienced, like there was a transmission, like I felt, I too was honored to be queer, but it was the first time for me that I had that view. It was a change of view, you know, it was a change of, you know, before I could live with it, you know, there was all the kind of internalized homophobia and the rest, you know. And when she said this, there was a kind of a liberation, there was a realignment of sight, and suddenly I understood, wow, that is such a privilege, that is such a particular angle on society, such a vision we can have. You know, I had never felt it in this way. And so that's a kind of, learning how to hold something. We hold something because we think it's the only way to hold it. And suddenly insight that can happen in the walking, in the sitting, in the eating, in the listening. There's a realignment. Something that was not helpful can be let go of, and something appears. So it's not will. Huh? What creates an insight? It's not the will. Huh? I'm going to change my view. I'm going to have a liberated view about this now. Or it's not like this. A part of what happens to find the ways to hold things, I think, is I would call it kind of soaking in, So I'll be here wanting to be somewhere else, maybe, or somebody else, or feel something else, And over the hours, wanting to feel something else, be somewhere else, But keeping attending, showing up again, at some point, there's something that will realign or show itself, come into focus. Wow, that's exhausting. To want to be somebody else. Or to bypass. I have to read the book again slowly, and notice who's saying what. But when I devoured the book, it was just names were flashing by and of authors, something that comes back here for me in terms of kusala, akusala, recognizing how to be with. So there was somebody in one of the authors of the essays to come was saying, I'll put it in my words, but around gender dysphoria, that the deepest kind of acceptance was accepting gender dysphoria instead of trying to bypass it, trying to, shove it on the side, and the total acceptance that it was there was extremely liberating, And so, in these ways, what we learn to find here is how to hold things. And we know from the inside, when we feel, when it's right, we don't need somebody else to tell us. We know, oh, that's the way to be with this. Yet here, there are, suggestions that we make. So I'll make one that for me, after 20 some years of practice, this is something that has never failed up to now. It's never been not useful. And it comes straight from the teachings, from the kind of theory. The theory, by the way, came from practice. It was people practicing who wrote stuff down or organized stuff, It came from practice. And so, in the teachings, I'm putting this in my words, there's two kinds of qualities that we can bring to any situation, event, internally, externally, being with something beautiful or something hard in the body or hard in the heart or psyche, in the world, in society. So these two kinds of qualities are, one kind of quality is a quality of curiosity, interest, kind of engagement with what is happening. And the other quality is a kind of a measure of calm, non-reactivity, it could be presented this way. And so when there's these two kinds of qualities together, it seems like it's, well, it is it is the actual qualities needed for insight, for deeper understanding. But ways that I've seen this very much alive in my life is, I'll try to take different things. There's something I don't want to do that I have to do. So I could do it resentfully, but sometimes there's this flexibility of mind or the remembering of these two qualities, and I say, so Pascal, there's no choice here. So could we bring a measure of interest, of curiosity about this, and a measure of calm. And then I usually see that it's helpful for me to go through this. If there's something beautiful happening, I see that it's also very helpful. Because I could easily, in an experience of something beautiful, get kind of excited and fearful that it's going to go, or, you know, that I'm, you know, that others should experience it too, or, you know, like 100 things, you know. And I can, and then I lose some access to what's actually happening because I get kind of, you know, agitated in some ways. And so if I can remember and say, hey, Pascal, this is beautiful, this is meaningful, this is rich, valuable, you know, can we bring some calm and some quality of connection, engagement with this, like be really particularly present here, I see that it's helpful. If you know, if I feel like shit in some ways, not so great, I'll probably invite a third quality that I wanted to talk about here today. Is it's going to be helpful for me if I bring some curiosity. This is really the field of mindfulness here. Oh, look at that. Feeling this dejected. Is that the word? Dejected. Feeling dejected. Ah, it's so interesting. It's so different than feeling, I don't know what, hopeful, up, high, tender, or, you know, dejected. Ah, look at that. So a measure of interest for the local formation, a measure of calm, you know, when usually I would either fall entrapped by, or, you know, under the spell of, or push away, which would create more distress. Hitting the middle path here. Can we bring a measure of interest for that particular way of being? And a measure of calm. And for me these days also, all these difficulties I recognize as kind of a doorway to compassion, to tenderness. And this to me is very surprising, that something difficult in the body, in the heart, in a situation, when usually for me would be a highway to aversion, reactivity, despair, you know, all this, closing down, attacking, you know, disconnecting, etc. So these events that are difficult, events of the heart, events of the world, like there's I almost want to call it a kind of alchemy. How is that possible that these things could lead to a vibrant heart, to care, to compassion, to tenderness? And I think, talking about queer teachers, I think this one I owe very much to Zenju Erthin Manuel, who is an American teacher who teaches, so we can go and sit with her, practice with her, or read her book, or listen to her online. She has the title of one of her books is the way of tenderness. And as a queer black woman practicing Zen in the, I think, white male dominated environment where there was a lot of unconsciousness, or is probably, and bypassing. I mean, she teaches this. I'm just relaying here. She talks about bringing complete tenderness to these aspects of her experience, that, you know, the intersectionality and the specificity of the, you know, it might be in a moment, maybe the microaggression, or it might be the larger sense of oppression, or the feeling of lack of safety, and how she seems to suggest, as an appropriate response, complete tenderness. So to me, reading her book and her words and listening to her, I got very, very intrigued by that. How to hold what is difficult, ugly, oppressive, with care. And so here, for me, that's partly the practice that we do. You know? So many transmission from queer teachers. We're talking with Mishka at lunchtime about bell hooks, and I was telling Anushka that a few weeks ago I listened to an hour-long radio interview in French, bell hooks French, impeccable, so beautiful. But this was not like, it was definitely an amazing feature to hear her. And there was so there was an interview with a white cis male, French, and you know, over the hour, definitely a few of the questions were kind of off, you know, like the person was not understanding the situation well, you know, and making assumptions, and to me the kind of transmission. So I want to actually tune in, you know, when somebody has amazing qualities, knowing that we're porous and there's a possibility of transmission, I actually want to really tune in and get the transmission. And bell hooks was had such equanimity, like this stability of mind. You know, it didn't feel like she was. Sometimes words come in English, I've never used them. I don't know if it's the right use. She was not phased. Is that like, you know? She was there, like, totally resourced, and this person was asking these questions, and she was correcting the question, correcting the vision. There was a kind of a kindness, but also absolute clarity, like no compromise, you know, like, and kept reorganizing, you know, the listener's understanding of reality, you know, and the questioner's understanding of reality, and. There was even here and there a real playfulness, and what was really, really impressive for me was the clarity, the uncompromising way, and the not abandoning kind of not abandoning what's still have difficulty putting this in words, but it seems like, you know, like there would be something abandoned by getting angry or irritated, like that. It was it seemed almost like I feel this as a faithfulness to self. You know, she was not abandoning herself because of somebody else's, you know, confusion. You know, there was anyway. So here, these are the things we learn to hold. You know, with all the different appearances during the day. You know, it's either, you know, you're being we're being like pushed right and left from the inside, from our the own play of our minds and emotions, or we're being pushed from the outside, you know, with the way, you know, the framing of the retreat, the schedule, or the access to this, or the not access to that, that would be helpful, you know. So it's an, you know, although it's a beautiful, from my point of view, place, it's also very much imperfect, you know. The meal might not be at the time you would want it, or the, you know, the room, the one you would like, or the, you know, the whatever, the teachers, or the, you know, whatever in the structure. And so how to not be in the perfect situation internally or externally, with care, with stability, with tenderness, with accompanying oneself. I had written a bunch of transmission from different teachers. So maybe one that comes to mind here and now as appropriate. Maybe is one from Gavin Harrison. Gavin Harrison actually died a few months ago. Huh? So dear teacher. I think I would describe him as you know, my own impressions of him as a somewhat ecstatic artist. You don't agree? Do you not agree? Is it off now? No, it's on. I might have caused this here. I'm not sure. And I'm sorry about this. Talking about the imperfect world and how to meet the rocky world. So anyway, Gavin wrote a book in the lap of the Buddha many, many years ago. It's actually the first Dharma book that I ran into. And it was quite amazing for me to read a book. I just ran into it traveling, you know, there was somewhere where there was books left. This book was there, picked it up, was reading, and I had just learned I was HIV positive within the last year. And here was a book on Dharma practice by someone who was a survivor of sexual aggression or abuse, and living with HIV. And kind of welcoming me on the path. You know, I'm talking very personally here. You know, that's how it felt. You know. And so there was the book. I didn't know about the person. You know, and one day I was teaching co-teaching a retreat at Spirit Rock in California, and I made a mistake. I showed up a day early. So I arrived there, I think the retreat starts at 3, but there's no movement, there's nothing happening, like there's not like the kind of activity, and I'm like, so strange, you know. And then I find out I'm just 24 hours too early. And so I'm there, I'm like, what am I going to do? Oh, there's a community hall where they give classes at night, I'm going to check who's there. And there was Gavin was there giving a class, and I thought, oh my God, 20 years later, this is my chance to meet this person. And I went to the class, and there was, I don't know, maybe 200-300 people in the big community hall, and Gavin was there reading poetry and storytelling, and at some point he does a Q&A, and there's a young person who raised their hand, and they start describing their experience, kind of reporting on their practice. They say, oh, I'm trying to practice, but it's not working so well, and you could feel a lot of confusion and ache, you know, difficult being this being these days. And at the same time, there was such a beautiful sincerity, kind of like something very candid, very the beautiful sensitivity. Gavin was listening to the person, and actually everybody was listening to the person with such care. It was really even visually, like all eyes were turned or all ears, you know. And there was kind of you would see like almost lines. All the lines were going to towards this young person out there. You know how there is this kind of convention, you know, we're here, you're there, you know. And so Gavin was listening, and as he was listening, he just stood up and walked in the crowd, you know, and sat on the ground in front of this young person while they were describing their experience and practice. And he was listening, and then he took their hand in his hands. And he said a bunch of things I can't remember. It was just so beautiful, the quality of the presence, you know, of the meeting. And at the very end, he said this that seemed to be a description of what was actually happening in the room. He looked at the person and he said, sometimes we're the last person to find out that we're lovely. And it seemed like a description of what was happening in the room. It seemed like everybody thought that this young person was absolutely lovely, you know, and worthy and you know, all this. But this person couldn't see this at that moment. They didn't have that ability, you know. I don't know, maybe my sense or my hope was, my sense is just a sense, maybe it's a hope. It appeared as a sense. I was a sense like, this person is going to find out. They're going to find out. You know, if they keep this kind of sincerity and attention, it's going to become clear at some point. Could finish with something from Zenju, Earthen Manuel here, a kind of a prayer or an expression of metta. So I invite you, if you want, to close the eyes. It's titled For All Beings. May all beings be cared for and loved, be listened to, understood, and acknowledged despite different views, be accepted for who they are in this moment, be afforded patience, be allowed to live without fear of having their lives taken away or their bodies violated. May all beings be well, in its broadest sense, be fed, be clothed, be treated as if their life is precious, be held in the eyes of each other as family. May all beings be appreciated, feel welcomed anywhere on the planet, be freed from acts of hatred and desperation, including war, poverty, slavery, and street crimes, live on the planet housed and protected from harm, be given what is needed to live fully without scarcity, enjoy life, living without fear of one another, be able to speak freely in a voice and mind of undeniable love. May all beings receive and share the gifts of life, be given the time to rest, be still, and experience silence. May all beings be awake. May all beings, no one excluded, be free, protected, and awake. Consideration. Okay. And bon appétit.